All right. Thank you so much for everyone who stayed. I know it's already been a long day. Winner, can we go ahead and take roll?
Chair Brown?
Here.
Vice Chair Del Carlo?
Here.
Regent Brager?
Here.
Regent Goicoechea?
Here.
Regent McGrath?
Here.
You have a quorum present.
Thank you. Before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washu, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 tribal nations of Nevada, 27 sovereign nation tribal nations of Nevada. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 933-5568-7402 and passcode 555-555. Is there any public comment in GBC? Hearing none. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? SES, is there any public comment on the phone?
None at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to move on to agenda item number two for possible action, approval of the minutes.
So moved if there's no additions or deletions.
I have a motion by Regent Brager, second by Regent Goicoechea. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you.
Aye.
Now we're going to move into, and I'm so sorry, I lost my, I lost my chair's report. Too much excitement. Okay. Sorry. Now we're moving into agenda item number three, chair's report. I am going to make this quick. So I am pleased to say that we are still focused on streamlining the educational pathways across ENCHI. We're expanding efforts initiated with the common course numbering from a few years ago, and we're aiming to simplify the transfer process between our institutions and standardizing how we recognize AP, CLEP, career and technical education credits, military service, and credit for prior learning. These initiatives are central to our mission, making education more accessible and efficient for our students, while also conserving resources and reducing redundant processes. I'd like to quickly acknowledge the collaborative efforts from UNR's University Center of Economic Development and UNLV's Center for Business and Economic Research. Both have been instrumental in conducting today's program gap analysis. And as always, special thanks to Vice Chancellor Archer and Assistant Vice Chancellor Brown for their relentless dedication and exceptional work in advancing some of these critical agenda items. So for a little saving of time, before we go into agenda item four, I do want to say that we have postponed agenda item five to a later meeting, and thank you for TMCC for that flexibility. So I'm going to turn it over to Vice Chancellor Archer and Assistant Vice Chancellor Brown.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Daniel Archer, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, and we're going to provide some updates on some of the work that we've been doing in the policy space as well as grants and projects here. So I'm going to talk about the policy work here. We have made proposed revisions to the Credit for Prior Learning policy here. I want to give Tarina Caserto, that works out of our Reno office, credit. She's worked real diligently on that. There's kind of three pieces of this. We've added language that will position us to standardize college credit awarded for scores on AP, CLEP, and international baccalaureates. We've also removed some restrictive language that limits opportunities for our institutions to award credit for prior learning. And then we've also added some avenues to increase opportunities for credit for prior learning. So we've shared this with the chief academic officers. We've shared it with the registrars. We have shared it with the faculty senate chairs. We actually gave them until Monday, April 28th, to provide feedback here. So that window will close here in just a few days. And then the plan is that we will bring you all a proposed policy to review and hopefully approve when we convene in June.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, Vice Chair Del Carlo, members of the Workforce Committee, Natalie Brown, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development and Community Colleges. So I'm going to expand a little bit on what Vice Chancellor Archer was talking about, but providing a high-level overview regarding each of the three initiatives that we've been awarded some type of funding or we're now part of some sort of initiative group to move and drive these items forward. So each supports our overall strategic goal of advancing equitable student outcomes and improving workforce alignment, but each also has its unique area and focus of strategy. So we thought it would be helpful to give a really brief overview of all three and what they're doing. As you've probably heard me talk a little bit about the Holistic Credit Mobility Project, but we have two others that I wanted to provide some details on. So Holistic Credit Mobility, this is going to be an 18-month project. This initiative primarily addresses that student credit mobility across institutions and credit earned outside traditional classroom settings. So some of the major outcomes that we're expecting from the Holistic Credit Mobility Project are going to be some of the policy alignment, and you've heard Vice Chancellor Archer talking a little bit about some of what we've already started in our own policy development and expanding that. But we're hoping to be working with our cohort and looking at best practices, align and validate credits from diverse sources. A technological integration, exploring scalable technology solutions, track student progress, assess prior learning, and streamlining the credit transfer process in the CPL space, as well as utilizing data analytics to identify barriers, enhance student outcomes, aiming at improving retention and graduation rates. The second initiative I want to highlight is a brand new just in the last few weeks. This is a Constellation of Support initiative, and this is with Student Ready Strategies. So we are one of two states that have been awarded this particular grant, and this is for building institutional capacity and system-wide capacity to implement credit for prior learning reforms and frameworks. So this will be through structured mentoring, collaboration, and work with Student Ready Strategies. So the ideas behind this will be providing dedicated workshops, quarterly coaching from national experts, and access to Constellation Ed, an online platform offering guided workflows, customized tools, and the policy implementation on here will be supporting our institutions in developing, implementing CPL policies that recognize learning from various non-traditional sources. Some of the additional outcomes we're expecting here is standardizing the CPL processes across NC institutions, increased faculty and staff capacity to assess and award CPL. One big piece of the Constellation of Support initiative is really bringing in that professional development, bringing in our faculty voices here, and making sure that we are being real inclusive in developing these types of policies. The third is a community college growth engine, and this one is a 12-month cycle, and this will be equipping state and system community college workforce leaders to design innovative workforce line micro pathways that enhance student employability and economic mobility. Some key expected outcomes of this one is stronger alignment between community colleges and industry demands, increased responsiveness of colleges to local and regional economic conditions, and identifying potential non-credit-to-credit pathways to be added to system-wide CPL. And this is particularly with community colleges, but our 4 years, if you are interested in participating, don't worry, I will be reaching out to you as well. So advancing a system-wide CPL strategy is essential to broadening recognition of learning gained through professional certifications, licensures, workforce training, supporting faculty and staff in adopting and expanding portfolio-based assessments and other CPL methodologies, as well as establishing culture of validation for prior learning that's embedded in academic and workforce strategy. So through these initiatives, ENSHE is committing to creating a more inclusive, efficient, and responsive higher ed system that acknowledges the diverse pathways that students take towards degree completion. I'm deeply appreciative of the generous support from our funding partners, whose investment will undoubtedly make these transformative initiatives possible. And equally important is the visionary leadership demonstrated by Regent Brown and those serving on this committee. Thank you for championing critical efforts like these to expand credit for prior learning and for recognizing how these strategies directly support Nevada's workforce needs and help more students access meaningful career opportunities. And with that, I conclude my report.
Thank you so much. Does anybody have any questions from the committee? Regent Gogachia said we'll see how it works, but I am optimistic that this is exactly what we need to be doing. I sat here about a year ago and we talked about how I'd been on the board for a year and that I just didn't feel like we had done enough. And there were so many gaps in the whole process, and we're doing so much on so many levels, but there was just a few things that we can make it seamless and really make sure that we're not losing students and we're not making it difficult. And I think, you know, with the gap analysis that we're going to next and these programs and just identifying the initiatives, I think we're setting ourselves up for long-term success, and we're going to be able to look back on this even just a year from now and say, you know, we really did change the system for good. And whether the students realize it or not, we're going to make it easier for them to matriculate. We're going to make it easier for them to enter the higher ed space, and then quite frankly, get into the workforce a little bit faster, which is just a huge positive and a value add for the state of Nevada. So I'm always there for that win-win-win scenario. So thank you both. Really appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. So now we are going to move to agenda item number 6, and we're going to turn the floor over to get a briefing on the gap analysis. So thank you so much. And SDS, you can keep it at 90.
Oh, well, thank you, Madam Chairman, Madam Chairwoman, members of the board and committee. For the record, Fred Steinman, Director, University Center for Economic Development in the College of Business at the University of Nevada, Reno. I also currently serve as the principal investigator for Nevada's lithium battery, critical element, and other EV material regional technology and innovation hub. And it's a pleasure to be here today to present a preliminary overview of our findings relative to the program demand gap analysis of Nevada's workforce and various workforce development efforts championed by the Nevada System of Higher Education and individual institutions across the system. Very quickly, wanted to recognize everyone who's been working on this project, both from the University of Nevada, Reno, and as the chairwoman mentioned, from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and specifically the Center for Business and Economic Research. I did want to specifically recognize Mr. Christopher Corral, who's with me today. Chris is a master's in quantitative economics student at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And while he and as well Amanda Joy Lee are students at UNLV, they're also on the payroll for the Center for Economic Development as graduate student researchers. Really kind of building out, again, our continued statewide efforts, not just in the north and the rural parts of the state, but also in southern Nevada as well. To quickly talk about a program gap analysis and what it is and why it is useful for institutions of higher education and various workforce development partners to pursue. primarily a program gap analysis, such as the results that are going to be presented to you today, is really an opportunity for us to get a comprehensive understanding of how both industry sectors and occupation sectors are evolving over time, and the unique new and emerging demand for specific skill sets in that workforce that is needed to support broad economic development efforts, either at a community level, a regional level, a state level, and even a national level, and then essentially compare those industry and occupation sector trends to what is happening in the training of that workforce. And that training can either be in the more formalized institutional approaches that we see at our community colleges and four-year university institutions, through our K through 12 public schools, various career technical education programs, or the work of even private sector and nonprofit community-based organizations. Kind of with that general understanding of what a program gap analysis is, our methodology in examining the economy and economic characteristics of the state of Nevada, as well as the emerging occupation and workforce development trends, really kind of began with a overview of relevant socio-demographic, economic, and housing characteristics for the state and for all 17 counties within the state of Nevada. That's important because there's not a whole lot that unifies the state of Nevada as a statewide economy. In a lot of ways, the state of Nevada had ended up as kind of the leftover remnants of other territories that became other states. Northeastern Nevada, the Elko, Eureka, Lander, and White Pine County area certainly probably has more direct economic ties with Idaho and Utah than it does to the northwestern portion of the state or the southern part of the state. On a day-to-day basis, Southern Nevada is much more tied to Southern California, Arizona, New Mexico. But of course, Las Vegas is a globally integrated city to global economic trends. And the northwestern portion of the state is very much tied on a day-to-day economic basis with the Pacific Northwest, Central California, and the Bay Area as well. As a result of that lack of economic tie, we really do see a wide range of economic and even socio-demographic and housing characteristics for different parts of the state. And because of those differences, that begins to generate different industry and occupation sector trends. So it becomes very difficult in a state like Nevada to develop uniform, one-size-fits-all workforce development initiatives and strategies. That's particularly challenging for the institutions of higher education, which work well beyond just kind of the immediate community that each of the institutions are located in. Nevada has a very mobile workforce. In Nevada, we have the highest rates of kind of intra and intra-county commuting of our workforce. For example, here in Southern Nevada, we have a high percentage of individuals who may live in Clark County, but may commute on a daily basis to neighboring Nye County. We also have a significant percentage of individuals who live in Nye County, but commute back to Clark County on a daily basis for work. We've seen those trends really escalate in the northwestern corner of the state. Continued growth and expansion of the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center in Storey County has really become a major regional draw of employees living in Washoe, Carson, Douglas, Lyon, and other surrounding counties. And again, this becomes a major challenge from a workforce development standpoint of trying to figure out, okay, where is your workforce living, but also where is your workforce working? And what are those industry and occupation sectors that are creating that workforce draw? In addition to that, we also pulled various metrics of industry and occupation sector growth and change for both the United States nationally as well as the state of Nevada and for each of Nevada's three metro areas. We looked at about 21 to 22 major occupation sectors for those five geographies as well as every single associated detailed occupation sector. totaling just over 2,600 detailed occupation sectors at the national, state, and for each of those three metro levels. Looking at the change in things like total employment, associated location quotients, changes in wage, income, median, and average, again, just to get a general idea of what the changing demand for different workers in different occupation sectors are. We're working on completing the analysis of program enrollment and graduation trends, not just for each of the ENSHE institutions, but for each of the 17 K through 12 public school districts throughout the state. Certainly the efforts of the K through 12 school districts and especially their career technical education programs have become a major supplier of trained workforce in several key emerging industry sectors. And that's especially true for our rural non-metro communities. We've also incorporated efforts of various public libraries throughout the state as they become drivers of workforce development initiatives. And again, specifically in the rural non-metro parts of the state where we see a lot of new emerging industry sectors beginning to kind of define or redefine the state's overall economic base. And then, of course, it's a simple subtraction effort, looking at the demand that is growing in different industry and occupation sectors for different workers with different skill sets, and then subtracting out essentially the graduation amongst K through 12, CTE, various two-year, four-year, and other degree and certificate programs to see whether or not we're actually producing the workforce meeting those changing workforce demand that we see in emerging industry and occupation sectors. And we hope, certainly we do at the Center for Economic Development, but also at CBER, the Center for Business and Economic Research, that the results of this program gap analysis will help inform a wide range of workforce and even economic development policy at both the local, regional, and statewide level as well. I know time is limited, so I'll move relatively quickly through the statewide and regional perspective of the state's economy. This has become a growing focus and area of focus for the Center for Economic Development over the last five or so years. Back in 2022, the Center for Economic Development began the process of mapping the supply chains of key industry sectors in the state of Nevada in partnership with the Governor's Office of Economic Development, the Department of Employment and Training and Rehabilitation, and each of the eight regional development authorities in the state. We started with mining, moved on to tourism and hospitality, healthcare, and this year we're just in the process of finishing up a similar mapping effort for advanced manufacturing. That views the world from an industry standpoint. And the difference between industry sectors and occupation sectors is industry sectors really tell us about the behavior of individual firms. You know, what is their total economic output and where are they buying goods and services from? Whereas the occupation sector data is really, again, focused on the employment of individuals in different individual occupations that may bridge those industry sectors. Another area that the Center for Economic Development has really engaged in is the development and implementation of various comprehensive economic development strategies and a whole series of strategic plans, both for cities, counties, public library systems, several of Nevada's federally recognized tribes and Native American communities, as well as a series of the regional development authorities throughout the state. And over the last five or so years, kind of anecdotally, what we've heard from all these organizations and entities is that workforce has become the number one barrier to various economic development efforts throughout the state. Individual companies are coming to the state of Nevada, especially in our new and emerging industry sectors. They are looking for employees to fill positions today. And many of our regional development authorities and other economic development organizations, when they're asked to fill a request for 300 individuals working in an advanced manufacturing field or an emerging firm and interest in tourism and hospitality or healthcare, the regional development authority usually says, I couldn't find you three workers, let alone the 300 that you're looking for today. That said, workforce is very much related to other critical parts of the community and economic development landscape. Again, it's very hard to import a workforce in the state of Nevada if you don't have the availability of housing to support that in-migration. We know the struggles of the availability of housing in our large metro areas, certainly here in the Las Vegas MSA, but also in Carson City and the Reno-Sparks area. But this has become to the point of absolute critical in a lot of our rural non-metro communities where, again, a lot of these new and emerging industry sectors are starting to take root. So housing becomes kind of a 1A barrier and obstacle to the development and growth of a workforce to support continued industry sector diversification. Second item there, kind of the 1B concern, is availability of education and childcare services, which is ironic in that education and child care services is critical to various workforce development efforts, but we have heard through our work or through the center that individual parents looking to move, and again, especially to our rural non-metro areas, that the lack of available child care services, daycare services, high quality education services, parents are simply just willing to forego an opportunity to earn $100,000, $150,000 a year in an emerging industry sector if there's nowhere for their child to go. And then kind of the 1C barrier on the workforce development front is really the availability of healthcare services, both kind of basic primary emergency physical care services, but to the more advanced and even mental health care services. In short, nobody wants to be 3 hours away from an emergency room or more advanced care if there's an issue. So those issues, housing, education, child care, and health care, have all kind of become barriers to the importation of a workforce. And of course, that kind of plays into what we're doing with the Nevada Lithium Batteries and other EV materials tech hub. As this board and each member understands and knows, the University of Nevada, Reno, led the charge in that application over the last year and a half. July of last year, we were awarded $21.5 million as part of our Phase 2 application, and we probably made the workforce development case probably a little stronger than maybe we needed to. As out of the $21.5 million award, $17.5 million from the Economic Development Administration was allocated to the implementation of our workforce development component project. Again, even in the tech hub, we've really underscored the fact that we do not have the workforce in place today to support the creation of an additional 3,000 new businesses, the retention and expansion of 2,000 existing businesses throughout the state, or the creation of 50,000 new jobs over the next 5 years to sufficiently close gaps within the supply chain of Nevada's emerging lithium battery, critical element, and other EV material sector. And that's just one simple sector. That is a case that continues to play itself out in the broader mining, quarrying, oil and gas extraction sector, as well as other key industry sectors throughout the state as well. To kind of give you a general highlight of kind of where the economic loss is occurring, because we simply do not have the workforce to support broad business creation, attraction, retention, and expansion efforts in these key industry sectors. Going back to our work on mapping the supply chain of the mining, quarrying, and oil and gas extraction sector, the update in 2024 identified a leakage of approximately $1.24 billion in economic output just in the gold ore mining subsector of this industry sector. Those are dollars that individual firms in this industry sector have to send out of the state of Nevada to buy goods and services to support their operations here in the state of Nevada. And again, without the workforce with the necessary skills, those gaps will continue to persist. And it's not that we can close all these gaps, either in the gold ore mining, metal mining services, oil, gas extraction, silver ore, or copper, nickel, lead, and zinc mining subsector. But again, workforce has emerged as the single contributing factor to the expansion of these gaps within these individual supply chains. We saw similar gaps in 2023 when we mapped the supply chain of the state's tourism and hospitality industry sector. And again, far and away, tourism and hospitality is Nevada's number one industry sector. It drives upwards of 30% of the state's total gross domestic product, depending upon how you measure it and what you kind of loop into tourism and hospitality. But like other key industry sectors, it's incredibly leaky in that a lot of the annual economic activity and output that it produces essentially has to leave the state to purchase goods and services to support major firms in the tourism and hospitality sector. And again, from an economic development standpoint, we want to really focus on those business creation, attraction, retention, and expansion efforts to have more of the supply chain within the state of Nevada, so more of the economic activity and output stays within the state. But we simply cannot support that broad level of business creation, attraction, retention, and expansion efforts because we simply don't have the workforce, either in total numbers or with the demanded skill sets in order to successfully close those gaps. Healthcare industry sector, again, critically important to the state's overall vitality, both from kind of just a general quality of life standpoint, but it also represents a significant contributor to state GDP. And again, across the industry sector, we see major gaps within the supply chain, and individual firms within these areas, like dentist's office or individual hospitals, individual and family service providers, simply have to export more of the economic output because there aren't the businesses in the state of Nevada to essentially supply those primary firms. And what has become the most significant contributor to these gaps is, again, the lack of an available workforce to work in individual firms that could close those gaps. On May 12th of this year, students in my BADM 779 graduate seminar in logistics and supply chain management will be presenting the results of their work on examination of the advanced manufacturing industry sector. And again, same kind of gaps. Again, the primary firms within the advanced manufacturing sector for the state, which has become increasingly important to the state's overall economic health and prosperity, especially since the Great Recession and the efforts of the Governor's Office of Economic Development and others to diversify the state, simply essentially has to export a significant chunk of the economic value of the sector because there aren't the firms in Nevada that can essentially supply to these firms. And again, to kind of just continue to underscore the point, again, the availability of workforce to support those secondary and tertiary firms within the industry sector is really the limiting factor and contributing factor to these continued gaps. Messy chart here, but this maps the change in the civilian labor force for every single county within the state of Nevada relative to the state and the United States. Essentially, those counties highlighted in red shows, you know, some level of overall decline in the civilian labor force in those counties. So in the last 6 to 7 years, we've seen overall decline in the civilian labor force in Esmeralda, Eureka, Humboldt, Lander, Lincoln, Mineral, Story, and White Pine counties. And again, these counties really represent the future for a lot of our new emerging industry sectors, especially the lithium battery critical element and other EV material sector. And not only are we struggling to kind of get this industry up and running, but we're up against kind of this, you know, wind in our face of not having enough workforce in the counties where this industry sector is going to be a major driver. Those in green, Churchill, Lyon, Nye, and Washoe, are where the percentage change in this 6 or 7 year period exceeded that of the state of Nevada as a whole. So only, you know, four or five counties statewide actually saw their civilian labor force grow at a rate that was greater than the state as a whole. And those in yellow are kind of in the middle of those kind of red and green areas. But again, you can kind of see the regional nature of the behavior of the workforce in the state of Nevada. We see kind of these different pockets of where the workforce is growing versus other parts of the state where the workforce is actually continuing to decline. Not surprising, we have seen kind of the workforce of the state of Nevada continue to tighten, which is kind of ironic given that the state of Nevada has one of the highest unemployment rates across the country from a statewide basis. But you can see in almost half of the counties within the state of Nevada, even despite the impacts of the COVID-19 global pandemic, the unemployment rate of these individual counties have continued to decline year over year and have declined at a rate significantly greater than the somewhat decline at the statewide level. And again, these are in counties where we really do start to see new and emerging industry sectors. So not only do you have a shrinking of the civilian workforce, but the individuals who are available for employment are getting fewer and fewer as those unemployment rates begin to decline. Pretty much across the board, you do see that tightening of the labor market. There are just fewer and fewer workers of the necessary skill sets for more and more firms to essentially compete over. From the labor standpoint, as a worker, that's a great thing, right? You know, you have more people bidding for your labor, and you're fewer and fewer of the labor force to offer that. But from a broader economic development standpoint, this again is kind of the nightmare scenario, is just not enough workers across the state in key industry sectors to support broad economic development efforts. Really quick, as we're kind of working on summarization of the graduation data, again, both K through 12 through higher education, this committee understands kind of the impacts and ongoing impacts of the COVID-19 global pandemic. You know, we've seen kind of our four-year institutions kind of return, you know, to pre-pandemic enrollment rates, but we're still seeing a bit of a decline amongst three of our four two-year colleges. And again, that represents a real concern, especially when you compare that to what's happening in the overall shrinkage of the civilian workforce and the tightening of the workforce as well. Not producing additional graduates across a variety of certificate and degree programs, again, is just continuing that contribution to the tightening of the workforce throughout the state itself. Some other socio-demographic, economic, and housing issues that I'll kind of skip through given limitations on time. But again, one thing I wanted to really highlight is the challenge on the housing side, and again, how that kind of ties into the workforce development component. While the program gap analysis itself, again, is really just focused on looking where the demand for workers are versus who's coming out of our K through 12 and higher ed institutions to fill those positions, housing is again kind of becoming another barrier to that initiative. And this is probably an area in our recommendations where we really say, here's an opportunity for other parts of the state government, the cities, the counties, and other organizations throughout the state to really work with the workforce development partners to address these gaps in the workforce as well. Because we're really not seeing the level of growth needed in the housing stock throughout the state in order to support broad growth of the workforce moving forward. So moving into the occupation sector analysis. Again, as mentioned, we looked at this from May of 2019 through May of 2023 using the occupational employment statistical data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics for these five geographies nationally, statewide, and for the three MSAs in the state. We looked at the change in annual mean income, annual median income, hourly mean wage, total employment, and then at least for the state and the three MSAs, the location quotient in the most available year. And from there, both at the major level, the 21 or 22 major occupation sectors, and for about 2,600 plus detailed occupation sectors, we've really been able to kind of identify which occupation sectors are the best opportunities for the state of Nevada to target in terms of an overhaul of workforce development efforts across the state. This is for the United United States, those cells that are highlighted in either green or yellow represents a change over the May 2019 to May 2023 period that was greater than all occupations combined. So you see here for the United States as a whole, management occupations, business and financial occupations, legal occupations, healthcare practitioners and technical occupations and others really represent opportunities at the national level. They are essentially growing and paying wages and income that are higher than kind of the norm you would expect across all individual occupation sectors combined. And the reason why we highlighted the national numbers as well is because, again, we know Nevada's workforce is very transient, and not just between counties, but between state lines as well. So the opportunities being developed at or occurring at the national level are also opportunities for our workforce development partners in the state. At the national level, essentially for workforce development efforts here in the state of Nevada to essentially align state-level activity, economic activity with national trends, these are, out of the 22 major occupation sectors at the national level, ones that we've identified as kind of strong performance and opportunities to kind of better align our workforce development efforts with. Surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, a lot of those occupation sectors will actually emerge again when we look at the statewide and MSA level as well. And again, that's likely the result of the last 20 or so years of further diversification of the state's economic base, essentially better tying the state economy to kind of national economic trends as well. This is for the state of Nevada, and again, same level of analysis. Again, this table would be absolutely impossible to read if we reported all the detailed sectors that go with each of these major occupation sectors. But again, you kind of see similar trends for the statewide level of occupation sector data as you do for the national level. Again, those cells highlighted in green or yellow are ones where those actual or percentage changes were greater than what occurred for all occupation sectors for the entire state of Nevada as a whole. The one column that's added here that isn't in the national one is the location quotient. And what the location quotient tells us, if you have a location quotient of one, essentially you are producing exactly enough workers to meet demand at that geographic level. So again, a location quotient of one tells you that there's equilibrium in the system. You have just enough workers to satisfy demand at that regional level. Those location quotients that are less than one is an indication that demand exceeds supply, and we essentially have to import workers to satisfy demand. So each one of those cells highlighted in or written in red ink for the location quotient were occupation sectors for the state of Nevada whose location quotient in 2023 was less than one, or those occupation sectors where demand statewide for workers in those occupation sectors exceeded supply. So we had to import workers from other parts of the country to fill positions. And again, that starts to suggest policy options on the workforce development front. Here are areas where we're already having to import and where we might want to start focusing on producing more domestic supply to satisfy demand in those occupation sectors. Statewide, again, these are kind of the targeted and recommended occupation sectors that we identified based upon this data. In a lot of ways, again, they match up nicely with some of the targeted sectors we've identified at the state or at the national level. Again, probably not surprising as kind of the state continues to diversify. We've seen real opportunities emerge statewide for management, business, and financial operations occupations. Given the state's continued population growth, growth, as well as the continued aging of the population, the healthcare practitioners and technical occupation sector, and healthcare support occupation sector is a real opportunity, an area where we have to import a sizable workforce to satisfy demand as firms and related industry sectors continue to grow. And even for our metro areas, construction and extraction and transportation material moving occupations remain viable targets and opportunities as well. This is for the Las Vegas MSA, again, kind of the same level of analysis, looking at change in mean income, median income, mean wage, total employment, and location quotients. Again, kind of the same type of targets start to emerge. In those occupation sectors that had actual and percentage changes, even over the course of the pandemic, that exceeded all occupations within the Las Vegas MSA. And again, for the location quotients themselves, a significant number of those occupation sectors had location quotients less than one, indicating that those are major occupation sectors where the Las Vegas MSA and employers in the Las Vegas MSA had to essentially import a workforce to fill positions in those individual occupation sectors. The list gets a little more targeted, if you will, less broad than the state or national level. Kind of makes sense when you start kind of bringing into a smaller geography. But for the Las Vegas MSA, again, occupation sectors that exhibited overall strong performance and where there just simply is not enough workforce to satisfy local or, in this case, regional demand, to a degree matched up with the state fairly well. Not surprising given the Las Vegas MSA represents a significant portion of the state's total workforce and total economic base. But again, business and financial operations, computer, mathematical, life, physical, and social science. Again, that's probably a good indication that the Las Vegas MSA area continues to diversify its overall economic base. That said, continued growth of the tourism hospitality sector, good indication that arts, design, entertainment, sports, and media remains relatively strong as well. To kind of wrap up for the Reno Sparks MSA, again, same level of analysis, identification of the occupation sectors and kind of where the opportunities are. For Reno Sparks in particular, again, similar types of occupation sectors begin to emerge where we're simply not producing enough workforce to fill open positions in those sectors. Essentially, again, in the Reno Sparks MSA, where in these occupation sectors, firms are having to import workers to fill critical positions, but also where those measures of income and hourly wages exceeds that for all occupations combined. So again, if you're trying to get a return on investment of your workforce dollars, these are the occupation sectors in the Reno Sparks MSA to focus on. And then finally, for the Carson City MSA, again, a little bit different mix in terms of occupation sectors that exhibited overall strong performance. But again, a number of occupation sectors that had a location quotient less than one, indicating, again, this MSA having to import a number of workers in occupation sectors that pay relatively high wages and incomes and that have exhibited strong overall total employment in the last 4 to 5 years. For the Carson City MSA, these are, again, kind of based on that criteria, the targeted occupation sectors. Again, occupations where there isn't enough workforce to satisfy local demand within the MSA, but occupation sectors that pay relatively high wages and income. Again, an opportunity to kind of focus our workforce development efforts moving forward. So this is kind of our list of 14 major occupation sectors for targeted opportunity within the state of Nevada to kind of, again, continue to reshape and reform and expand workforce development efforts across the state. We took these 14 major occupation sectors and we're kind of in the process of translating those sectors into associated required skill. What are individual employers in those occupation sectors saying they need in terms of skills for individual workers they want to hire? This data right here, which is kind of a list of required skill sets for employees in each of these 14 targeted industry sectors comes from the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Periodically, the BLS, or Bureau of Labor and Statistics, surveys tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of employers across the United States in each of these occupation sectors. And they simply ask employers, what are you looking for? And employers, you know, communicate to the BLS, and BLS produces the report. And we are going through that kind of process now, kind of coalescing those skill development demands that employers across the United States are really demanding. Of course, there's a bit of a translation that has to occur. You know, one cannot get a four-year degree or a CTE program certificate completion for technical expertise. That's not a degree program. That's not an educational program. So currently working with the faculty and staff at CBER, as well as our research associates at USED, we're kind of in that last step process of the translation, taking the skills listed in each one of these occupation sectors here for the first five, for the next four, educational, instruction library, food prep, healthcare, practitioners and healthcare support, and then finally these five, and then really being able to see whether or not students are graduating either in K through 12 career technical education programs or through the various degree and certificate programs throughout the Nevada system of higher education with those skills. So that workforce then is available to fill positions that currently run vacant in these 14 targeted occupation sectors. I'm pretty sure I went a little bit over time. My apologies for that. Try to get through as best I could, but certainly happy to field any questions that the committee might have.
Regent Brown for the record, and thank you so much. No, I geeked out the entire time, so really appreciate it. We are going to turn to questions from the committee, and I'm going to let Regent Brager go first.
Susan Brager for the record. Thank you so much. I'm on the Governor's Workforce Development Board and also chair his child care subcommittee for exactly what you're saying. And the frustration is not only in our rural areas, but even down here, for $17,000 a child, how does someone go to work, even in the fields where we need them? So this was, I feel like Caleb Cage came and spoke to us last week. So I felt like you were, it was amazing. I don't want to say like you did the same talk, but I mean, it really was that same identity. The lithium, what do we do? Like Esmeralda County and how it's going to have the different availabilities of jobs. But I guess what I would like to ask, getting around that in a kind of a long way, that's why I asked to be on Regent Brown's committee, is because I'm hoping that we can stop being so fractured. So we have our Workforce Development Board, we have the Governor's Workforce Development Board, we have the people up in Deter doing what they're doing, and I feel like if we got more together, we'd get more done, is kind of my philosophy. And so when you talk about, I mean, I grew up here, and I'm not saying when. I'm going to let my counterpart over there say when he grew up here. No, okay. And I'll just say I was before him. But anyway, you know, watching how things happen. So when I was a county commissioner, I had Sandy Valley, Good Springs, Bonnie Springs, Mountain Springs, and all those rural areas, and learned a lot about when you said they travel back and forth. We have people here that go teach in Pahrump, and we have people in Pahrump that come teach here. But in regards to the lithium factor, how do we, in our campuses up north, how do we make sure that we are developing the right programs? Because I'm a big proponent of certifications. I know we need college degrees, being an attorney or being a doctor, or doing certain things. But some, and for myself, 35 years in real estate, so I'm certified with having to take more hours than academia takes, quite frankly, after they get their degree. How do we incorporate that in our system so that we can have, as we go, Indian Springs, because of Creech, Indian Springs grew and got the necessary fire, police, the different things that they need. So kind of a roundabout way, and what I'm asking you is, do you see a way, or do we need another presentation that I would do in new business on how do we develop more and better certifications that maybe are a 1 year or 2 year, but a viable job at $80,000 to $100,000 a year?
So again, Fred Steinman, University of Nevada, Reno, for the record. That is the trillion-dollar question, especially in these emerging industry sectors like the lithium loop in Nevada, but also other technologies like artificial intelligence, continued growth and development of data centers. The University of Nevada, Reno, just last Friday opened its brand new nanofabrication laboratory. So semiconductor and other nanofabrication is becoming part of the Nevada landscape. And the real challenge is I don't sadly have a good answer for you because these industry sectors don't exist yet. Again, in the state of Nevada, in fact, in the entire United States, there is only one active commercial-grade lithium mining operation in the entire United States, and that's Silver Peak in the central portion of the state. Lithium Americas is not open. Ioneer is not open. Even our major lithium players like American Battery Technology Company and Redwood Materials on the recycling front, they're not at full commercial scale yet. So even the employers don't know what the workforce needs are. A lot of praise, and I'm speaking now from my tech hub hat, especially for what the community colleges and Great Basin College, Western Nevada College, and Truckee Meadows Community College, and even the College of Southern Nevada are doing in this space, because they're the ones with kind of the boots on the ground working directly with the industry partners. But our challenge is with these emerging industry sectors, their workforce needs are evolving so quickly that it's almost practically impossible to say, well, let's develop an 18-week, training certification or a 2-year degree or, heaven forbid, a 4-year degree in the hopes that that will match up with the demand 18 weeks, 2 years, 4 years from today. And this is why I think your point on the integrated approach is so critical, where having public sector, private sector, nonprofit, and community-based organizations trying to triangulate what these emerging workforce development needs, especially in the emerging industry sectors, is critically important. But also don't want to ignore those existing base industry sectors that are having massive workforce shortages right now. In the northeastern Nevada region, especially in the mining and natural resource extraction sector, some of the largest mining companies, the traditional hardcore fundamental cement block parts of the mining industry of the state, Nevada Gold Mines, Centerra, Kinross, I-80, even the secondary suppliers like Komatsu. I mean, they're offering six-figure salaries to 18-year-olds coming out of high school because they're not necessarily interested in, do you have the skill set? Do you have a pulse? And I want to grab you off the labor market so nobody else can have you, and then I'll work with the NG partners at Great Basin College or wherever to essentially train that person up. But again, that creates the sucking sound, if you will, on all the other industry and occupation sectors as well. Developing workforce development initiatives around these efforts is, again, not just the consideration of the primary industry sector, but like in our supply chain gap areas, tire production. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars leaves the state every single year just in mining and tourism and hospitality, just for tires. There's an opportunity there, potentially, to build the certification program around or a training program so that we can successfully recruit a tire manufacturer, which is a supplier to those larger industry sectors.
Gosh, thank you so much. And that's what it's going to take, is almost trying to invent it before it's there. But knowing that they don't, I mean, I love college bound is good, but sometimes that 18 weeks is what they need to have the background or to be able to go into that. And that's what I like about our CTEs across our, the county. That is how I was educated. So that's what helped me. I'm not an I person, but create that when I was a trustee to have staff implement it. And it has made such a huge difference in lives of those that don't want sports and are looking just to get their education and move on. So thank you so much. This is super informative, and I think it's going to just take month after month of identifying where they are and what we do and how we get them.
Thank you.
Oh, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really good report, and you definitely have your fingers on it. There's no doubt about it. Your diagnosis of rural Nevada especially, and again, there are trades out there, especially the first guy that can come up with an underground mining program You can graduate 5,000 people a week and get them to work in the north. I mean, there's that big a demand.
Yep.
Everybody's looking to go on underground, but there's not many people want to play gopher. So it's a problem. And so how do you get the, and again, we look to local government. Okay, they could play a big part in this. But again, they can't even bring the housing, and they're struggling to meet those needs. Your point there in rural Nevada, it's a trailer camp anymore. It's worse than it was 100 years ago as far as people living in tents and shacks. They've got these new little camp trailers, and you know, they do their shift in a camp trailer, and they're going back to Idaho, Utah, or somewhere else. That's where their family is, and so that's a problem. We need to figure out how we meet that need so we can get them to relocate and be a part of the community in rural Nevada. But you're right on point, and you talk about the only lithium deposit. I hate to say it, but I worked for Foot Mineral in the early 70s building an evaporation pond. So that's been there a long time, and it's the only one, but it does work. But again, Humboldt County, as that moves forward with American Lithium, I don't know if anybody's prepared for what those needs are coming forward in Humboldt County and Winnemucca. It's going to be scary. So, but again, very good report. I agree with you. I just go through the bits and pieces of it, trying to figure out, yeah, here's the data. Now, how do we fix it? And that's the problem.
And just to follow up a little bit. So in regards to the housing, people are not like they were years ago, like even in Caliente, when they have the row houses, or in Boulder City when they did the dam, people expect more, unfortunately, to start out. But how, just re-educating them, this is a starting point for you, and from here, then more development, whether it's apartment-type housing or what. So I guess it's the education of what you can do now, but the type of living you can make, and then we can further develop the community, like Humboldt was one of the main ones Caleb spoke about. And so I find that having an organization like this, but maybe bridging it with the Governor's Workshop Development Board, could hopefully broaden everything and make it move maybe a little bit faster. So this was great. After a long morning, this was invigorating at least.
We got some information.
You know, just to quickly, if I can add to that, and again, I think it, you know, both members of the committee really emphasize, and I think really highlight the need to kind of break past some of the siloed community and economic development efforts that have kind of historically characterized Nevada, and not just in terms, well, the workforce people are over here, the education people are over here, the housing people are over there, but also in terms of the communities and the regions themselves as well. Again, we're likely to see that cross and intra-county community, and even across state lines, likely increase, especially in the short term, as communities like Northern Humboldt County, Northern Nye and Esmeralda County start to really kind of feel the impacts of these new emerging industry sectors as well.
Thank you so much. Regent Brown, for the record. So one thing I was thinking while you were giving this, I work for a local RDA, and piggybacking on what Regent Gogachia and Regent Brager were just saying, is that, you know, I really think that this is something that we sit down with each of the RDAs, the Regional Economic Development Authorities, and we really show them that, you know, they all do their own studies, but where I think the next step that once we have the conversation with the RDAs is then, what are your target industries? What are you going after? Do they mirror what's on here? And then we go back to our institutions and we say, okay, we need to map out a 5-year plan because this is what they're going for. They're going after them now. And you know, some of these take 2 years, 3 years, 5 years to actually close a deal. I think with the tariffs, it's making things hard too, right? There's a lot of factors that go into a company moving here. But obviously, workforce is always their, if not first, it's their second question. So I'm trying to, through this committee and with this entire board eventually, is figure out how are we the number one economic development tool the state has. You know, we already allow for companies who get go-ed abatements. Their staff and people that move here are automatic in-state tuition. Great. But how are we graduating people? And so I would say that this is just like an excellent huge first step, and then the next thing has to be we need to do the footwork to mirror what this says with our RDAs, come back and then say, okay, looking at our catalog, what is future-proofed? What will be jobs of the future? What will be high-paying, scalable wages that people will only need one job? And then also use it as a litmus test for every single class and degree program that's pitched to us. Asking for our approval. I'm tired of making decisions with no data. That's not a good way to, and no business would ever do that. And, you know, we could, a reasonable person can make judgment that neuroscientists are good, or, you know, engineering is obviously a future-proofed. But some of these, you know, I want to be able to use a report like this and kind of like the phase two, right? I want to be able to use it as a litmus test. So when a college comes and says, hey, we want to do X, Y, and Z, I want to be able to say, okay, there will be jobs based off of our thing. Because it does this state no good for us to train someone in a degree that does not have a job here, because that is taxpayer-subsidized education that we will never reap the benefits of. And it is we are a self-fulfilled prophecy of losing if we do not nip that in the bud now. And so I think this really, it gives us a arsenal to go and work with GoEd and our RDAs and say, hey, this is what we've identified in the major areas. We understand your challenges. I also wrote a little thing here because, you know, I've worked with a couple of companies that have temporary homes, and they can, you know, build them up. They're solar, they're tiny homes, they're, you know, a bunch of different stuff. And I have gone to our friends in the rural communities for mining, and I was like, hey, I think I have a solution for you. And, you know, I was really appreciative that, one, they took the meeting, but also they explained to me that those type of things aren't even in consideration because they have such little land that they control because of BLM. And here, and I added that to your list. You said housing, yeah. Workforce, land. That's the third one to your list because we don't own 82% of our state. Now I've heard 80, 84. I'm going with 82. I'm going right down the middle and somebody can correct me. But we don't own 82% of our state. And that makes it really hard when we're trying to look at these things because we could bring in a company that manufactures tiny homes, we put them up there, but the county commissions are gonna look at us and say, I only have so many acreage and I need families to move here. And it's a chicken or the egg scenario, right? Because we can't say, hey, you know, GBC is going to do a training certificate for the mining companies. We're going to have a company that's based out of Sparks develop the houses. We'll ship them there. And then, you know, no, because they're just going to stay there Monday through Friday and then go back home to their families. You have to bring, and you said it, like you have to bring the education. Then you have to bring the grocery stores. Then we have to convince a grocery store who will only have, you know, a little bit of night traffic 5 days a week to even operate. Like we are up against a lot of barriers here, but I think the one thing that we can do is take your report, actually work with our economic development agencies and at least come up with a phase two, for, you know, then we work with our institutions to actually implement it. But we know that implementing a new program, whether it's a certificate program that could take a couple months, who pays for it, how do we implement it, how do we promote it, how do we, you know, that those are all things that we have to figure out. But if we have to do degree programs, we're talking 5 to 7 years before we can actually start graduating people into the workforce by the time you get it set up, so, you know. And so I'm not trying to be daunting here. I'm actually saying I'm so excited that we can at least start someplace. And we can say all the things that are wrong, which I think I just did. but then it gives us a roadmap to move forward. And so I'm beyond excited. Yeah, I mean, I want to give the committee. Yeah, please. One more. Regent Gogachia.
Thank you. And I guess what I think we really need to do is reach out to the companies, i.e. Lithium American, and they're 5 years out. We know that. But again, they have to know, and if they can actually come to a meeting and say, hey, this is what we're going to need 4 years from now. And that allows that high school senior then let us implement the program and allow that high school senior then to get that skill set. So when they actually start laying the track to Winnemucca that it's ultimately going to end up with the lithium in Oakland or wherever it's going, we do have those people in place. But again, then how do you tell the city of Winnemucca and the Board of County Commissioners in Humboldt County, hey, okay, now you've got this little man camp out there that's going to accept, 300 people. It has to be 3,000. You have to gear up for it. And there's not so much land, even in the rural communities up north, because we do have the checkerboard, which really helps, those every other section being private property. The infrastructure, how do you get the water to them? Where's that sewer treatment come from?
Again, for the record, Fred Steinman, UNR, I might get myself in a little bit of trouble, but I think one obligation of the Tech Hub and the Regional Development Authority and others is to create also an expectation in the minds of the private sector that there's an expectation for them to be good partners with the K-12 systems, higher education in each of the individual institutions. I really like to highlight Truckee Meadow Community College's partnership and engagement with Panasonic as a relationship where the private sector is doing exactly that, telling Truckee Meadows Community College, hey, this is what we need, and then also stepping up with the resources to support it and support the development of that workforce. Because fundamentally, at the end of the day, addressing these identified gaps between where the opportunities are in growth of the major and detailed occupation sectors and where the availability of workforce is for the benefit of the private sector, first and foremost. So I also think there, with that conversation of how can we be better on the public sector side of the equation, it's also a question of where can the private sector also support those specialized and targeted workforce development efforts to close identified gaps that are most limiting at this point.
Hey, we'll get the green light on here pretty kind of delayed coming up. Okay, and I agree with that, but you take in with GBC and ELCO, they're doing a very good job, but again, it's reactionary. The minds say, hey, we need these people, so we've got these programs in place, and they take the first year and they might be doing instrumentation or electronics or whatever, and then they start working part-time. And ultimately, yeah, they end up, they're 20 years old, they got a new pickup, a good job, and a girlfriend on the right, ultimately they're hooked. But I just don't know how we, as NISHI, really takes a look at and how we can invite the private sector to come to us and say, hey, we need to move beyond this immediate need today, and what are you going to need in 5 years in Humboldt County or Esmeralda County? Because clearly it's going to happen. Lithium seems to be, the new Comstock load. So, and then if it's not that, it'll be something else. Again, whether lithium recycling, IT, AI, you call it whatever you want. Bottom line is, but I don't think we can get reach enough. We're responding right to the immediate right now, and that isn't quick enough for when we're talking five-year degrees. So, and again, I think the private sector has to step up and say, hey, we're going to need this in Humboldt County, or we're going to need this in Story County. And we need a little more lead time from the private sector. How you convince them of that, I don't know. Those numbers that you give show, hey, if you don't give us enough heads up, you ain't going to have. And that's where you're at. There won't be anybody there to employ. So thank you, Fred. Good job.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that, Regent Gogachia. And I do think that we have partners in our RDAs who can help facilitate this, but it is maybe us and she having a conversation with our institutions to see what their roadmap looks like. What is your capability? I will highlight our friends over at CSN. Thank you for being in the audience, holding up the institutions. Our friends over at CSN, they can stand up a training program in a matter of weeks. Mm-hmm. It is getting our, and I know others can do it too, but I know they do this prolifically. It is getting the private sector to know about these things. And that's our responsibility to let the RDAs know, so then they can translate that to private sector, so then we can make that connection to our institutions. That's how we, I think, can be a spokesperson in this. That's for new business, existing business. I also think if we were very clear about our roadmap of what we currently can offer, certificate programs and degree programs, and we talked with our RDAs about it, matched up with their target industries, then we can at least say today for the next 5 years, we're already training people, we're already graduating people in these sectors. And if we know that Winnemucca is going to need certain things and Battle Mountain is going to need certain things, we can actually start planning ahead. And I want to believe that our institutions in the North are having some of these conversations. But I think if we make it a more transparent, robust, and I want to also shout out our presidents, because I know that they are not sitting on their laurels and they're being proactive. But I think as a system, we need to say, and this is one of the things I want to do with this committee, was just say that, like, we want to be the workforce filler. Tell us what you need, and then we will work with our presidents and institutions to make this happen, especially for our rural friends who have very few access points other than maybe GBC, who has campuses. So yes, and your point is just well taken, and I just get excited about it, because I do think that, you know, I know that all the presidents in the South sit on the Southern board, and I know all the presidents in the North sit on the Northern board, mm-hmm. and I know that there is that connection, but I think if we empowered our presidents to actually have the conversation and ask them to get us data points using this report and then taking it to our catalog for future, I think that makes us a value add for everyone.
And to that point, CSN there, find you an old mine and start graduating underground miners. I guarantee you, I'll get them a job for everyone you can turn out, because it's there. I don't know how you get it or what that would look like, but you know, you talk about I-80 and Kinross and Nevada Gold. You know, they're on that Cortez project. They're going underground. It's going to work 1,000 men. You can't fire them. They're high grading them out of northern Idaho. And most of them don't want to come. That's where they're at. So that's reality. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to step on you, Regent. Regent McGrath, for the record, I really want to explore. I want to thank you, Regent Brown, for your leadership on this. But I also do, just as a new regent, having had meetings with President Donnelly, with President Hilgerson, I want to understand how better to support them, because I think they are really spearheading, you know, these private sector relationships. And I want to thank you as well, sir, because, you know, in my naivete, I kind of think, oh, the free market is going to just, where people are needed, they're going to be able to go. And obviously, it's important to understand, you know, what are the impediments and what needs to be encouraged, because there are problems that, you know, are structural that are stopping that from happening. So it's really important to understand and have that data. So. And if we can continue to talk about how to support the presidents, that would be great.
Madam Chair, I'll take a point of privilege sitting in for Dr. Kibler today, president of the College of Southern Nevada. This is James McCoy, executive vice president at the College of Southern Nevada. And this conversation is so timely. Sir, your report was amazing. And the comments around workforce development and private partnerships with our institutions, I've got to tell you what happened last night. The College of Southern Nevada. Nevada Gold Mines was in our house, 12 of them. We were welcoming 162 members of our community who came together to support 18 dual-enrolled students from Rancho High School and Central CTA who participated in a Nevada Gold Mines scholarship dual-credit program, whereas they received a certificate from CSN in diesel and in industrial maintenance. And then here comes the really cool part. Last night, as we were cloaking these graduates, Nevada Gold Mines says, and we're not done with you, they offered 8 of them full-time $80,000 jobs and full-ride transfer scholarships to Great Basin College to continue their studies while they are also working. And so this was just last night. And this was our third cohort in that experience. We've been at this since just before COVID. And so your points are well taken. And it would be really awesome if we can share some of these stories and then use them, to your point, as examples of how other industry partners can also do the same thing by investing in our people. So if we're not going to find the population to your point, in Elko, Nevada, to the extent that it is needed, then the industry needs to come into the population bases within the state, circulate with all of the institutions across the state, and then produce the workforce accordingly. Nevada Gold Mines and Clark County School District in Colorado, Southern Nevada, just last night, a brilliant example of that. Thank you.
Well, if I may, Madam Chair, I really appreciate that, but it is true. They can't find the bodies to fill the load in rural Nevada or even out of state. So that's great news. The fact that they came down to Las Vegas, unfortunately, for some of these guys, the winters are a little harsh up north.
Well, I literally could talk about this for the next 6 days. I'm obsessed. But I just want to reiterate once again, thank you for taking the time to do this. And thank you for sharing, Dr. McCoy. I love hearing these types of things. But I actually think that's just like a perfect example of how our amazing companies in the state want to find local talent, because we understand that finding local talent means that they will stay. And you know, like you are a Nevadan, you'll more likely stay even if you go to a different part of the state. So I won't repeat that. But I just want to say thank you yet again. Thank you, Fred. Thank you to your entire team. Thank you to our partners at Zebra. Thank you. And I think this gives us a really good framework to, and we will be in touch for part two, because I think that there is a way to make this really invaluable. And just in the last meeting, I asked for our data dashboard to be a little bit more comprehensive so we can start telling a more robust story instead of just reporting out numbers, but actually interpret them and then give forecasting of what that looks like as far as, you know, graduation rates in certain industries. And then that can be a tool to when we go and talk to local companies, we can say, look, this is our forecast across the system, 300 students in X, let's go talk to them. And so that this is just going to give us a lot of ammunition to make our make this committee a very high functioning committee. So, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Almost. All right. So now we're going to move into new business. Does anybody on the committee have any new business?
It sounds like we're, just to make sure that maybe we need to get a recap of what certifications do we have so we know where we need to go if they're not there. Just, and it doesn't need to be formal, but just, I mean formal, but just like what you really offer, that we could encourage our high school students to let them know that they're there. Doesn't mean they can't go on to a four-year college, but it means that they can get a career-minded education quickly.
All right, seeing no new business, we are going to move into public comment. Do we have any public comment in Great Basin? Do we have any public comment in Reno, at the system office in Reno?
No.
And I don't see any public comment here in Las Vegas. SES, do we have any public comment on the phones? No? All right. Thank you so much. And with that...
Tell Carol it's way past her bedtime.
Yeah. And thank you, Regent Del Carlo, for joining us, doing a little time travel via Zoom. And I will adjourn the Workforce Committee at 4:16. Thank you.